Welcome to the Rearview Mirror Podcast, looking back on all that we don't know and a few things that we do. Live. Mic check.
21 listeners already this morning.
Get out of here.
To this week's.
Eagerly anticipating this week's episode.
I wake up in the morning. It's the first thing I tear to, yeah.
Do you really?
No, on Friday mornings, yeah. I will. I'll look to see what's going on. Because, you know,
only on Friday mornings?
Well, and Saturdays and Mondays and Wednesdays. I don't on Sundays because it's the Lord's
Day. The Lord's Day. Yeah, he didn't care about those numbers.
No, he's not into numbers.
Numbers. Do you know, so speaking of numbers, I'm in the real estate development world, and mm-hmm. we had a community meeting the other night on a project, really small, kind of out a little bit. Yeah. And so we held it at a church, and I tried to make it as far away from people as I could, because I want them to really have, you know, the only people that come to those meetings are the people that are complaining.
They're complaining, yep. Kind of like a church business meeting, really.
Very similar. And I wanted it to be as far away and inconvenient for them, so I made it at 5 o'clock. Like, you know, so you got to leave work early, you got to get there, you got to want to be there.
Yep.
We didn't have a huge turnout. So that's a win for us. But on the wall, I was reminded, and if you didn't grow up in a small church, you probably aren't familiar with this, but there's a board on the wall.
Oh,
and
I'm not
making this up.
No, I can't wait.
All right, well,
I've seen these boards. Yeah.
And it tells you who attended the morning service, who attended the evening service, who brought their Bibles.
Like by names?
No, numbers.
Oh, like numbers. Okay. Gosh.
How many people brought their Bibles? Mm. Hymns you're going to sing, mm-hmm. and how much money was given. This is all on this interchangeable board, and I had this flashback to my little church. We had that.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, what in the wide, wide world of sports is that? I mean, that could...
We could
talk about the dysfunction of that for ages.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's when you said numbers. I thought, oh my gosh, I just remembered that the other night.
Yeah, numbers show up everywhere.
They do.
Well, it's funny, you know, as we start this podcast together, you know, I know when we both started, we were like, we don't care about the numbers. We're not going to worry about it. We're just going to let it happen. I mean, that's what we said.
Well, you lied.
Probably.
No, not probably. You did. You absolutely lied. You just lied to me.
I know. I didn't realize I was, though, because I thought I was like, no, I just want to do this.
That's okay.
But it's been really fun. Just, you know, these little things that I know nothing about, but our daughter, Sarah, set up for us. It's been fun just to kind of peek on there and go, oh, there's some people listening. And then I think I told you, oh, I know I did. We were talking the other day about this, but it cracks me up that, you know, technically we're a global podcast now because we have one listener in Singapore and one listener in Chile. The Singapore, I can make the connection with that one. I think I know who that would be. I have no idea who in South America is tuning in or how they would have found us, but it's kind of fun.
I would like to know. So reach out to a South American listener because I would want to know who in Chile is listening.
Yeah, Rearview Mirror Podcast 25@gmail.com or something like
that. Right, and we'll get into the Enneagram, I guess, at some point, but the, you know, Enneagram 4, me, so a little bit of narcissism. One of the reasons I'd want to know is because that'd be a great place to go.
<'Cause> down there,
we could do a remote podcast in Chile.
We'll come and visit you.
Yes, right. Well, let's not make any commitments yet. No, let's find out who it is first.
That's right. Well, what are you bringing in the door with you today? What's on your mind?
It's Friday. We're recording again. It's always fun. It's Valentine's Day. We're recording. And I don't know if this is connected at all, and I'll defer to you. You can edit this out if you don't like it.
Yep.
But I had this thought just a minute ago pulling in. So, you know, I love music. I was texting with your son, Jake, about some music things this morning. And Friday on Spotify, people at Spotify know there's a thing comes out called Release Radar.
Right.
And I think, I don't know this, but I think it's tailored to your musical interests.
Oh.
I'm assuming it is because most of the things on there I generally like. And so Friday mornings when I get in the car, man, I turn on Release Radar, cup of coffee, I'm rolling. You know?
That's awesome.
Second song today was a new song by the Lumineers. And I'm not making this up. The title is Asshole.
Happy Valentine's Day, honey.
So in my mind, I'm thinking, boy, these things are AI driven. It's Valentine's Day.
And they know you.
And the second song is Asshole. And so I'm thinking, What in the cosmic universe is this about? But maybe nothing. Maybe it's just coincidence.
Jacob have the same song on his playlist? Did you find out?
I would not be surprised. In fact, you know, knowing men the way I do, there are probably a lot of guys that if they pulled up
the
release
up
radar,
morning.
Yeah, like, oh, that's a strange song to be pulling up today on Valentine's Day. But nonetheless, there it was.
That's funny, man. Speaking of Valentine's Day, you know, it'll be a few weeks after Valentine's when this comes out, of course. But I made a strategic a marriage faux pas last night. Yeah.
Well, and you've been at it a while.
Oh, I know. You'd think I'd know better. I don't know what came over me, but I was out and I was picking up some groceries and I'm just in like the Publix, Kroger, whichever one is in, and I saw flowers. I thought, oh, it's Valentine's Day tomorrow, I should get flowers. And you know me. I look at them and go, dang, they've just marked these up for Valentine's Day. These are so expensive. As if my wife has a value number to her, right?
Yeah.
And so
again, this is not your first Valentine's Day.
Oh, it's so not my first Valentine's Day.
And this was the day before Valentine's Day?
Yeah, which is sad, but it's true. I just thought, you know what? We're not going to do flowers this year. We don't need to do that. So I got home last night and we were talking and just visiting. And I asked some question like, hey, this may be crazy after all these years of marriage, but like, how important are flowers on Valentine's Day for you? Mm. Is that a flaw?
And for those that aren't watching on video, I'm shaking my head and rolling my eyes right now. But like,
I'm married.
That's bold that you would ask the question,
listen,
though.
But I'm married.
That's off to that.
Kindest women in the world. You know, so she goes, oh my gosh, I've told you before, don't ever buy them on Valentine's Day. They're marked up. And I thought, oh gosh, we're both such cheapskates. So I walked away feeling pretty good. But after 38 years, I can read facial expressions. So this morning at 8:00, I was at Sam's and I bought a massive big bouquet of flowers that.
Because they're cheap there.
They're cheap there.
Well, you're a cheap. You can put a monetary value on your love life.
Evidently.
Yeah.
Evidently.
And it's wholesale.
Evidently. It is. As long as it comes in a big box.
You don't have retail love. You're
worth the flowers from Sam's, but don't make me go to the florist.
Sorry, Laura.
Yeah,
sorry.
It's so sad. I was on another podcast a couple months ago. These guys, I'm sure they spent $300-$400 on flowers each for their wives this week, because they're just the kind of guys that, you know, they're going to go over the top every time. And
wow,
I'm proud of them, but I felt really good about these beautiful pink roses. She'll love them. That's her favorite color. And it'll be a surprise, since I basically said I'm not getting any last night. Oh, gosh. I need help. I need help. Anyway.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. But I mean, maybe some of that will come. Yeah. Maybe we'll get some help through this podcast, through venting and you know.
It's Valentine's Day, since we came in today going, we're not sure what we're talking about.
And that's way different than every other day.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, fair. And here I am talking about one of my many faux pas in marriage. Share one. Let me put you on the spot.
Yeah, I may defer on that. But
when you think about your, how many years now with Miss Jen?
Well, we got married in 96, yeah. So that's where I start, because sometimes it takes a minute for me to do math. But so
25
plus 4. Yeah, so 29. It'll be 29 in April.
That's great. That's great.
2 days before tax day. We got married on Masters weekend, which was not.
That surprised me.
Didn't go over well with some of my friends.
Yeah.
Many faux pas in marriage. The pause is not because I can't think of any. It's because I think of so many. I'm trying to think of which ones I'm willing to share. I'm a really slow driver.
You are?
Yeah.
Okay.
In the car. It drives my wife crazy. And before we started the podcast, Jeff's gone OCD on these microphone stands because they don't stay where he wants them to stay. And I've seen this before. I've seen this movie several times, but... So we have new stands that work equally as poorly as the old ones, but OCD is kicked in. But he's super efficient on things. And my wife's number one goal in life is to be efficient.
It's true.
And I am the least efficient outside of my work world. It's like I flip a switch in my work world, but in my not work world, I'm as inefficient as you can be.
Yeah.
Go to the store every day, you know, go past something, don't feel like stopping, I'll just go back later, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that drives her crazy. I'm married to an extremely social person. I'm less than social.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that's been a challenge. But one of the things I wish I'd done better early on, we have talked about this. This is probably a little more substantive. Man, I should have listened to her more.
Yeah.
Early in marriage.
Yeah.
And I wish I would have known more. Again, we keep saying this, and I guess we need to get into it at some point, but whatever, you know, most people have looked at or explored some kind of personality test, but the Enneagram, I think, it's worth looking at. It just gives context and tendencies mm-hmm. and language to mm-hmm. personalities. And I think so many of the things that we've fought about over the years, had conflict over, are just basic personality differences.
Yeah.
In your wiring. I don't see the world this way. She doesn't see the world this way. And she's very patient and, you know, but it just, I think we fought thinking, God, the other person's really trying to get at me.
Right. All right.
And they're not.
Right.
It's just the way they're wired, the way God's wired them.
Yeah.
And so, and I will say, of all the faux pas, one of the things I love about my wife, one of the many things, is that most of the time she still looks and acts excited when I walk in the door or when I call. Mm-hmm. And so,
yeah. Yeah.
I would not be excited when I called all the time. I can tell you that. But she's great about that, which makes me feel good.
Yeah.
But yeah, just I should have listened to more.
Yeah.
You know, listened carefully, critically, and like, you know, listening like, hey, what's she really saying?
Right. Right. You know? I was talking with a couple days ago and I thought, if I only had one thing to tell a couple getting ready to get married, I think what I'd say is use a timeout quickly and often.
Oh, that's good.
You know, like I look back to especially our early conflicts in our marriage, and they were always probably more me than Laura, for sure, more me than Laura. You know, I would get just emotionally charged. I'd be escalated, and I'd be just like, I've got to get my point across, and I would just talk so fast, talk over her, and you know, Laura, so steady. You know, my wife, she's just so steady, so even-keeled. And sometimes she would just, you know, make way too much space for me to talk instead of saying, you're overwhelming me, stop, you know?
Yeah.
And I just think, I wish I would have been, had the wherewithal just to call a timeout and realize, okay, something's going on in me. I think of those moments when you knew that what you were about to say next was not good, was not going to be good, it was not going to produce anything good, and yet, in your insanity, bleh, you blurt it right out. It comes right out, you know.
Right.
And I think it's one of the things that I talk about a lot is just, gosh, slow down, take a break, realize your brain's offline right now, and you're just emoting. I mean, I read some neuroscience research recently where they said that when we get emotionally flooded, you know, when we get kind of, they talk about our brains going offline, you know, when we're in that place, like with our spouse, and we're just like, you know, fighting, we're in the conflict, and it's not going well. The neuroscientists tell us that if we would take a timeout, if we would step away from it for 20 minutes, which doesn't seem like a lot of time, from 20 minutes, that's enough time for the brain to re-regulate.
Really?
Yeah. Now, again, assuming we're being intentional, being mindful, and being able to go, hang on a minute, wait a minute, that wasn't going well. What's going on inside of me? Go for a walk or, you know, do whatever you need to do, but just take a little time apart. I think there were probably times Laura took a timeout, and all I would do is use that 20 minutes to go, okay, let me get my 3 points down that I'm going to come back hard and fast on.
Right.
That doesn't help. But when we're really serious about going, gosh, I don't want this negative pattern to keep going, 20 minutes, and the brain kind of can settle down, and we can come back together and say, hey, that wasn't going well. I wish I'd have, you know, looking in the review, if you please, man, I wish I would have been able to slow down at times and just weigh my words more. I love that you said, listen, yes. On mine, I think it was more about, gosh, I should have been slower to speak.
Yeah. I think sometimes too early on in marriage, and maybe, and not early on sometimes, when you get hurt, you know, I won't speak for everybody else, but my tendency is to not want to take the time out. Mm-hmm. I want to say something injuring.
Yeah.
I want to
drive it. Yep.
Yeah. And I want to fight,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And, you know, Jen and I both, when our backs are against the wall, we can both bow up, so we can have some nice conflict. But I think what we've done better the last 2 years is really last few years, empty nesting, and you're forced to look at some stuff. I think we've done a better job of communicating.
Yep.
of talking about expectations and just leaving some things undone.
Yeah.
You know, where this is, you know, sometimes this issue is not going to be solved today. Yeah.
Yes.
And we got to be okay with that.
I think one of the things I love about watching you and Jen, you know, we get to be together this past week, you know, we were together for dinner.
It's entertaining, isn't it?
No, it's more than entertaining though. It really is. I think it's honestly, I mean, I honor you both when I say this. I think y'all have the ability to speak to each other really direct, but not harsh. You know,
yeah.
No, I'm serious. Like when y'all were cooking and I don't remember exactly what, but Jen said something and I read your body language. I thought he does not want to be asked a single question right now, but yet your response was, well, why don't you do that then? And it wasn't ugly. And she was like, oh, that's a great idea. And then she asked another question and you said something else. And again, it wasn't, I didn't feel like it was snarky. It wasn't harsh. It was just like, I've got this. And Jen goes, and she looks at me, she goes, time for me to exit the room. And again, she wasn't hurt. She wasn't like, you know, falling apart. It was just like, oh, Steve's in his zone and I'm ready to be misefficient. And he doesn't need me to be misefficient. And I don't know. I just think y'all do a really good job of bam, 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 back and forth fast.
We've done it a lot. And, you know, in fairness to her, she said, Jen is this is a little bit of a foreign concept to me. She's super sensitive to other people's needs.
Yeah.
You know? And so we had you guys over for dinner and our other friends, and she knows that you guys tend to, like the girls in that crowd, yeah, they get up early. Mm-hmm. You know, and tend to go to bed. And so everybody's working, doing stuff. And Jen's, you know, we're trying to figure out everybody's schedule. I said, hey, how about dinner at 6:30? And I could see the look on her face like, ooh, that's late. And yeah. I said, well, this is not a Brookdale retirement home dinner, so I'm not doing it at 5.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And so we, you know, because of schedules, I thought 6:30 is pretty good and we'll have some appetizers and hang out. And so I start cooking. You come over a little early and she looks at me and looks at what's been done in the kitchen and looks at the clock and says,
it's not adding up.
Will dinner be ready by 7? Yeah. And I know what that means. And I look at her, you know, and go, yes, of course it'll be ready by 7. Now, I've never had a dinner ready on time ever. So,
but we've also never left your house unfed.
Dinner is always served.
Yeah.
Yes. It always eventually gets to the table. And, but we just, that's our little dance. We know that. Yeah. And she's great. She'll help when I need help, but I'm a little bit of a control freak in the kitchen. So I don't like a lot of help.
Yep.
And, you know, just keep everything moving the way it needs to be, music going, and make sure things are going. But it's fun. Yeah, she's great. She's, we've talked about this before. I think we'd be a really good catering team.
Oh, you would. Oh my gosh.
Cause she is, man, there's nobody. I mean, sometimes I think you should get back in the, you know, like really get back in the work world only because she can get more done mm-hmm. in a short period of time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, substantive work, not frivolous stuff that you make up on your to-do list just to knock some stuff off. But I mean, man, you give her something to do, it can get done incredibly well and at a speed which, I mean, my daughter has that ability too. Yeah. It's like the two of them get together and I'm like, oh man, this is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Really
good. Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. When you, kind of on this marriage place, which on Valentine's Day, maybe it makes sense.
So our topic today is marriage.
I guess it is.
Look, it is. There we go. See, it always works out.
Yeah, I know. I love it. When you, I love how you just honored Jen beautifully. You know, one of the things I love about her. When you look back on dating days, you know, 30 plus years ago with
her. Are you really going to go there?
Yeah,
oh, with her. Okay. Quit. Yeah. Like, wow. Stop.
What were a couple of things, or what was maybe the main thing that you, when you met Jen, you really attracted you to her? Thought, wow, okay, this is different. There's something I'm curious about. What attracted
smoking
you
to smoking hot, man.
There, that was a perfect answer. Happy Valentine's Day, Jen.
Golly, man. Look like a little.
Okay. Besides that.
Oh, okay. I was going to expand on that a little bit, but I won't.
Go ahead.
No, it's okay. I don't know. I mean, yeah, I was physically attracted to her for sure. Still mm-hmm. am. So, she's just kind.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, we have a joke, a kind of a running joke in our family about the rank of niceness in our family, who ranks the nicest.
Oh,
and
that's great.
It, you know, Caroline kind of started this and, she's pretty self-aware, and Will and Jen are always vying for first place, but Jen is an Enneagram 6, if you know that. She's just more sensitive to people's needs, so she usually is ranked number one.
Yep.
I'm last.
Yeah.
And as you might expect, Caroline's gotten there a few times, but mostly it's me. But she's just kind of just gave me, you know, I think I've said this before, just gave me space to be me. Yeah. And she loves people unconditionally. Mm-hmm. I mean, she genuinely wants relationships mm-hmm. with people. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. I think that was just an attractive thing.
Yeah.
She likes to laugh, likes to have fun.
Yep. Yep.
And, you know,
I remember when we didn't really have formal premarital counseling, but Laura had this older friend. She was a counselor, and we met with her one night, and just before we got married, and she was just asking us some questions. It was really, really gracious of her to do. One of the questions she asked, she asked that question. She said, "Jeff, Laura, what was the thing you were most attracted about, you know, when you met each other?" And of course, I had the classic male answer, you know, her body, her looks, all that. But then she said, "No, really, but what, at a characteristic level?" And I remember Laura answered, and her answer was Jeff's sense of humor, his lightheartedness, his spontaneity. She goes, "It's just so different than my background. I love that." And then my answer was, "I think what I appreciate about Laura is just her ability to get so much stuff done so quickly. You know, Laura just got this capacity. Back in those days, man, she was doing so many different things. And I just was so impressed at how she could spin so many plates, you know?" And I was like, I just respect who she is and how much she gets done in a day. And I remember thinking, I don't know why we're answering this question. And then Fran, this lady, she goes, "Well, you guys kind of put a little pin in that, because in a couple years, those things that you're most attracted to will be the things that create conflict and tension."
Oh, wow.
And I remember thinking, you are so not right.
Yeah.
Gosh, did she nail it. I mean, what Laura used to look at me as going lighthearted and spontaneous and funny, you know, in a couple years, 3 years in the marriage, when kids started coming along, it was more like, "Oh my gosh, you're irresponsible. You're never serious. You need to show up. You need to be more attentive." It was just like that
impulsive.
Same thing. Yeah. That same thing just whoop, flipped.
Yep.
And for me, I would look at her ability to get so much stuff done, and I'd be like, "Well, you're no fun, and you're anal retentive, and you're just too busy. You've got way too much stuff to do, and you're never slow down. Just have fun." And that's always been an interesting question to me, is, you know, how did that thing that you were first attracted to, how did it in a few years begin to be the same thing that you go, "I'm seeing the other side of, like the shadow side of it almost, you know?" And it starts to be a thing that really bugs me, makes me angry, frustrates
right.
me, you know?
Right. Well, I think some of that is, you know, it's like when you think about your own personality, your strengths are your weaknesses.
Right. Right.
And so same concept, you flip the coin over, and I think, you know, even, yeah, the thing I loved about Jen and still love is, you know, she's sensitive to other people's needs, but when we're planning something
right.
and she's thinking of all the possible scenarios for whoever might come, I'm like, just send the text, you know, make the invite.
Let's just do it.
Right. And, you know, she's probably thinking, well, why don't you not put people in an awkward position and just think about them for, you know,
right.
and so,
right.
and there's, you know, again, last couple of years, we've just been kind of, we've been able to articulate that better.
Yes.
And kind of come to a common ground on, you know, yeah, all right, let's don't make it really hard on everybody, but then we also can't take into account everyone's schedule and ability. Let's just send it and see who can come. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
When you said that, I thought back to the days when, you know, we were parenting kids, you know, little kids, you know, and gosh, it's a lifetime ago for both of us. Our kids are grown and thriving, doing well. So grateful for that. But, you know, if you were talking to, or maybe, gosh, you know, if a 30-year-old dad or mom, for that matter, was listening into us, and they're in the throes of 2, 3, 4 little kids, you know, preschool, maybe one in elementary school, kind of that. Remember? I mean, you can feel it when I talk about it, right? And if you had a chance just to sit with them and offer encouragement to them about what their marriage needs in that season, like what would you offer them? What would you say to them?
Alcohol.
Of course you would. Big bottle
prayer,
of cab.
Yeah.
Prayer and wine is fairly biblical.
I mean, you know, it is. Yeah. Good question. I think what we needed, a couple things come to mind. You need to, I think it's important for probably most personality types, to see someone that's ahead of you.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, and you guys did that for us a lot. Mm. Gosh, you know, one of the things I loved about, I probably mentioned this, but I did some volunteer coaching at a local high school.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Coached football and a little bit of basketball. It was great. I did it once. Did the first stint was when my son was there. That was fun for a different reason and really rich. But I did it after he left and mm-hmm. after my kids got out of school. And the great part was, you know, parents come to you all the time with anxieties, things about their kids that worried them, and like, ah, that's going to go away. That's going to go away. That's going to pass.
Right.
Just hearing somebody else say that.
Yep.
And I think for most people, most of us, we look at folks around us and think, you know, especially in the world of social media, everybody's got it together. Mm-hmm. Everybody's doing right. great. God, did you see how their kids were just totally quiet, didn't dinner, and ours are just hellions running all over the place? We were the hellion family. We were not the quiet kids. And, you know, just seeing somebody else in that boat. And then the second thing is just having a place to get away.
Yeah. Yeah.
Once in a while, even, you know, somebody keep your kids for an hour, go get a pizza.
Right.
And usually it's the, you know, a lot of times it's the dad that's like, hey, can we get away, just the two of us? Mm-hmm. And the mom feels such responsibility, especially yeah. when the kids are young.
Yeah.
But just, I think you just, that's just one of those things you just got to suck it up and do.
Right.
You got to get away from your kids for a little while and go do something else. Just go walk something, yeah. Yeah. you know, yeah. just because one day, if your marriage stays together, they're going to be gone.
Yep.
And you're going to come to that point anyway. And mm-hmm. you're going to look across the table at the person and go, do I know you?
Right.
And do I like you?
Right.
And what are we going to do?
Right.
So you might as well start when you're younger.
Yeah.
Kind of set a little foundation.
Build those rhythms. Let's make sure we're spending time together regularly. Yeah. I think when you said the first thing about, you know, having somebody ahead of you, you know, there are a couple of couples, you know them, but the one that came to my mind this morning are Bob and Susan, the McKinneys. And gosh, they were, you know, they were probably 5-6 years ahead of us in parenting. The man's cold, so he just got up to put his coat on.
We're taking a break here because I don't know what's going on with Jeff, if he's got like man menopause or something, but it's 25 degrees in this office right now. Oh my God, it's cold. Well, it's 25 degrees outside. Look, the thing is reading 63.
Okay.
Sorry for that interruption.
Got you all taken care of.
Dang, I'll just start chattering while I'm talking though. All right.
No, but Bob and Susan, they were such that couple to us.
Oh, man, for sure.
You know, their kids were probably
they're the best.
5-6 years ahead of where we were, and they had boy, girl, boy. We had boy, girl, boy, boy. And I think I remember just some little snippets they gave us about parenting. But when they would talk about parenting, our availability to kids, realizing sometimes the kids want to talk at 11 o'clock at night. I think their oldest would come in and he would just flop on the end of their bed, you know, 11 o'clock at night, just suddenly wanting to talk. And Susan would say, I just realized this is the time I've got to show up. But even as they would talk about the parenting things, we also realized, gosh, and part of that is how do we make sure that we're finding a way just to get away? And Laura and I would often, when we would sneak out, even for just a 2-hour date night or whatever, I remember the thought that goes through my mind is, man, I really do like her. And it wasn't like I didn't like her, but it was like, I forget what it's like just to have her, for just for the two of us to be together. And I think that's great advice for the young couple might be listening to us.
Man, when your kids are young, you're managing a business.
It's so true.
And the more you have, mm-hmm. the bigger
the business is.
Yeah. Right. And you know, and the thing about that business is the revenue is usually delayed.
Yes.
And so, you know, I think especially the moms feel like, man, golly, all I do is give, mm-hmm. which unfortunately, that's kind of the job.
Yep.
It's a very thankless job mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. A lot of the time, because you just don't see a ton of reward.
Yeah.
Until maybe later in life. Sometimes you never see it.
Yeah.
You know, you just build in, you get, you know, and you get run over, and mm-hmm. again, it's kind of the job. But it is so hectic. And I was telling somebody the other day, our kids are at the age where their friends are having kids, We've got some friends of our family that have young kids. And so over the past year or so, you know, I love that age, like that newborn 1, 2, 3 years old, man. It's just, I love it. And so we keep kids from time to time. We'll just childproof the house, you know, don't worry about anything. Never say no to them because they're not our kids.
That's right.
So, but at the end of the night, as fun as that is, you're like, man, I'm a little bit tired. You know, it's more, you forget the physical work.
Right.
That's required. And so you're running around schedules and things. And then, you know, there's expectations. Mm-hmm. Should my kid be doing this? Mm-hmm. And where should they be in pre-K? All the things.
Right.
And so,
right.
Again, just.
But it makes.
You need a break.
Yeah. Well, I was about to say, it makes it super easy to see why our marriages often get the leftovers in those days. You know, these precious lives that we get to bring in the world, that we get to have, we get to build and train and disciple, which, gosh, what an honor. What a great joy. And it's really easy at the end of the day to look at, you know, look at the one across the bed from you and just go, who are you? You know,
well, let's be honest. It doesn't always feel like an honor and a joy to have that role as a parent.
We'll talk about parenting some other time. Absolutely. Yeah, so absolutely. It's exhausting and draining. Right.
Yeah. So absolutely. If you're out there and you're going, man, I didn't feel like that to me today. Welcome to the parenting world.
Jen will be really proud of you for saying that because you were thinking about others just for a minute.
I was, Jeff. Thanks for saying that.
I see you, buddy.
Golly. What a metamorphosis.
I think if I could, if I could offer something to, you know, young couples when they're in that season of you know, crazy parenting, you know, little kids. Although, well, this would be true for any couple. I mean, goodness gracious, I don't care the age. Don't avoid conflict. You know, I feel like in our marriage, we avoided it. We both were kind of people pleasers. We both, you know, wanted to keep the peace. We both were just like, let's keep things as easy as we can. And so we would accommodate each other sometimes way too often because I think we both were afraid of the conflict. I think for Laura, Enneagram 9, that's her world. Harmony, you know, unity, peace. Let's don't have conflict. And for me, I think it was just, gosh, it doesn't feel efficient right now. And I think there was this codependent thing in me of like, gosh, I got to keep my wife happy. I should just swallow that. I don't need to feel bad about that. I don't need to be upset about that. Mm. So we would avoid conflict. Of course, the other extreme are the couples that have no filters and that they fight big and ugly all the time. But I think that's one of the most precious gifts we can give our marriage is learning how do we, I say it two ways, how do we have conflict in a really healthy, constructive way? In other words, just see conflict as, gosh, this is just normal. We're two people. We disagree about something.
Right.
How do we get to a better answer, you know? And secondly, how do we make sure we can name negative patterns and really work intentionally to avoid them? You know, because there are negative things that when we do, they're taking a chunk out of our marriage.
Right.
You know? And the problem is for some of us, it's what we saw mom and dad do, or it's just what we've learned to do through the years. And we just think it's normal. You know, I mean, the extremes, you know, yelling or name calling or, you know, attacking each other,
right.
Character assassination. You know, I think when we hear those, we would go, oh, yeah, that's probably not cool to do to the person I love.
Right.
But gosh, if we saw a lot of that, or if that's where our fuse takes us too quickly, then that's the conflict that's not productive. It's damaging.
Why do you think, I'll ask it a different way. I was going to say, why do you think we avoid conflict? Why did you avoid conflict?
Yeah. I think at the personal level, there was something I believe that was noble about letting Laura get her way.
Hmm.
Like, my job as a husband is to serve my wife, and so if she wants that, I should just be okay with that.
Right.
If she doesn't want that, I should be okay with that. And so there was this faulty thinking. Now, where did that come from? My dad, I mean, again, we've talked about him a couple episodes,
right.
Kindest man on the planet, but my dad was so passive. He was so accommodating. And I think I just saw that as the model and did it for too long. But what goes on in those moments is there's so much resentment, bitterness being built up in me. You know, I mean, the narrative I would tell myself, oh, sure, we'll do it your way again. You know, that's not helping connection.
Right, right.
But I think that's, for me, I think that's where the avoidance of conflict came from. If there was another part of it, I think it was I had seen enough of ugly conflict in me growing up, interactions with siblings, that I knew that I had a really destructive bent in me that could come out, a really harsh bent in me. And I think there was this part of me that was really afraid of that coming out.
Wow.
And I didn't have the tools to know how to regulate it. So I just thought I better just shut it down, which again, I would not recommend. I think you've got to learn to regulate it so those things that are in there can come out, but come out in a healthy way.
What did that look like when it came out ugly?
For me, it was sarcasm was like my, you know, I had a PhD in it, you know, and I would be sarcastic. I was never a yeller, you know, I was never a name caller, never got big that way. But gosh, I would just use my tongue just to cut and belittle. And, I guess one guy who does tons of research, John Gottman, talks about this. He calls them the four horsemen of the apocalypse, the four really negative things we can do that damage our marriage. And one of them, he says that this one is the biggest predictor of divorce, is called contempt. And contempt is that dismissive posture. It's more than criticism. Contempt is where I'm just going, whatever. You know, I'm stiff arming you. You don't have anything to offer me. That's what my words would do. I would be contemptuous toward Laura.
It's dismissive. Like,
yeah, that's the word. I'd just be like, yeah, okay, sure. Yeah, yeah. Oh, of course you would think that.
Yeah.
A horse's butt. I mean, there's no other way to say it, you know.
Right.
Gottman's research.
Well, there is another way to say it, but you did a good job of restraining right there.
It was my song this morning.
Yeah, right. It was. Literally.
I was a horse's ass. Do you know the name John Gottman?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, his research in the 90s is almost terrifying to me and yet so cool.
He's spot on some stuff,
oh,
man.
Oh, gosh. He studied these 1,500 couples, brought them into an office. Just the two of them in there, gave them this prompt question, and they had a 20-minute conversation. And he watched them, you know, through a one-way mirror or whatever, took notes, observed what they're doing, body language, interactions, how they use their words, you know, just whatever his brilliant mind was doing. And then at the end of watching each couple for 20 minutes now, total strangers, you know, he would make a prediction. Will this couple be married in 7 years or not?
Wow.
And then he followed these couples for the next 7 years. 7 years later, his research showed that he was accurate in his prediction about would they be married or not, almost 94% of the time. That's almost terrifying to think that some guy could watch you and Jen talk for 20 minutes.
And figure it out.
But it's also kind of liberating because, you know, Gottman's often called the guy who created the science of love and marriage. Not just the art and the poetry, but the science. Like, gosh, there's empirical data points we can look at. And if these things are present, he talked about the four horsemen, as I said a second ago. He said, if these things are present on a consistent basis, dissatisfaction is for sure in your marriage and divorce is possible. I think that's why he calls them the four horsemen. It's like, watch out, destruction's riding in on your marriage
right. When
you're doing these four things on a regular basis. And again, those are the things that I would say are super unhealthy in conflict.
Hmm. You know, when you said that, I was thinking about there's one phrase, and I heard it early on in our marriage. I don't know who said it, and it was probably not original to whoever said it, but resolution of conflict leads to intimacy.
Yeah.
And I think that's true in business and in personal relationships and marriage with your kids.
Yeah.
You know, if you can't have conflict with someone and resolve it, At some point, it doesn't have to be resolved immediately. But if you have a relationship with a person that conflict is not present, I would almost contend that you don't really have a relationship.
Exactly. No, I think all that research that Gottman and this other guy, Howard Markman, all their research points to that. It just says, look, the road to intimacy is paved with healthy conflict resolution. Like, it's got to happen. I mean, if you and I start our lawn mowing business together, at some point, we're going to have conflict. I'm going to forget to fill up the gas cans. You're going to forget to
schedule. You won't. I will, but you won't.
It's in me.
Yeah.
But my point is, if we can navigate that conflict well, if I can own, I screwed up, Steve, my bad, all it does is it grows our trust in each other. But man, if I go to defensiveness or I start blaming you or we're in a heap of trouble quick, you know.
Right. Well, we kind of did that on this podcast. I mean, we've cooked together for a couple of events
and it
was good, but you carried more of the load in one area and I was kind of streamlined in another area we just talked about the good and bad of that.
Yeah. No, I think those are important conversations. I really do.
So I think just being mindful of the other person's position and, I was reading an article yesterday in the Wall Street Journal about, pre-Valentine's Day article and chemicals. And it's interesting that and I'm sure a lot of people know this, but the serotonin and the dopamine that kind of trigger that love, you know, fluttering of the heart.
Right, right.
Those chemicals don't stay.
Yeah.
It's not a consistent thing, right. Which is why sometimes you may, you know, the feelings of what you had 30 years ago come and go.
Right, right.
And that's normal.
Right.
That's natural.
Right.
But there are other things that do replace it.
Yeah. I remember years ago reading, I don't know if it's in a book or magazine or whatever, but some guy was talking about that very topic. I'm probably not talking about the hormones back then, but was talking about how his big phrase was, love is a choice. And I remember reading that, and I think I was so conditioned on the romantic side of love that I thought, no, it's not. You know, love is an emotion. Love is a feeling. You know, my endorphins need to get kicked up, you know?
Yeah.
But man, I remember reading that article, and it was, I mean, you know, here I'm 40 years later remembering it, but I'm going, golly, he's right. I choose to love someone. It's not just the emotion. It's not just the feeling. It's a choice.
That great theologian John Mayer, love is a verb.
Yeah, exactly. Action.
Or Pat Benatar, love is a battlefield. I mean, you know, both can be true.
Or Nazareth, love hurts.
Love hurts. How long can we do this? Right. Oh, we can do it. Yeah, this is good. We can do it a while.
No, but I do. I think even, you know, as we're talking about marriage today, I think, golly, to realize that even in our hardest, most conflictual moments, when we can choose to repair, when we can choose to move back toward each other, even then, hear what I'm saying? We choose. We make this choice every day I have the choice to, how can I love Laura well today? And gosh, some days I'm great at it, and other days, man, I'd hate to see the balance sheet because
right.
I haven't done it well at all.
What about when there's no resolution to conflict, when mm-hmm. it's unresolved? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So there's two ways I think about that. Again, I'm kind of in my Gottman mood this morning, evidently.
But go ahead.
I quote him all the time. I don't remember his number exactly. I think it's like 63%, if I remember right. It's something in the 60s, I think. He says that his research shows that like 60%+ of our disagreements will not be resolved in marriage. Mm. And again, that can either be really depressing sounding if I'm codependent and I think, oh no, we've always got to think the same and be the same. Or it can be really liberating when I realize, gosh, there's some things where I just need to be heard and you don't have to see it the exact same way. It's really okay. I think the bill of goods we sell for marriage is too often that we have to be, you know, we turn unity into uniformity.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to be exactly the same.
Aligned.
Yes. And I'm going, no, that's never going to be that way. You know, there are certain things that Laura enjoys and loves, and I'm thrilled that she does, but I don't want any part of. I'm not interested in it, and vice versa.
Right.
So we could either turn that to a conflict and try to be constantly making the other one be just like the other one, and then we get that kind of resolution. I'm not sure that's resolution. You know, I think that's conscription. I mean, I don't think that's exactly what we want.
Right.
Or we can really recognize the differences and appreciate those differences. So I think for most conflict, many times I think in conflict, it's important for us to be able to go, oh, you know what? We don't have to resolve, i.e. be on the same page. We have to, maybe the better word is accept the differences.
Mm.
But there are times I think I see it and you see it, and I've seen my own marriage where I can't accept the difference. We don't get to a place of resolution. And that's a really dangerous place to stay very long.
Yeah.
Because the marriage, the connection is deteriorating in those moments. So we have to have a way to come together and repair, to be able to go, hey, we don't see this eye to eye, but what can we do? How do we navigate this well?
Hmm.
I use an example. This is such a stupid example, but it's simplistic. If one night, Laura and I say, hey, let's go out to eat. And I go, gosh, I'd love to. I'm really craving Mexican tonight.
Mm.
And if Laura goes, man, I was thinking Chinese. Well, if we both double down on, no, man, I got to have my Mexican. Oh, my gosh, those chips, I can taste the queso right now. You know, I need a margarita. We've got to go out. And if she's like, no, man, I'm craving to go to, you know, little Chinese place. You know, at some point, I mean, that's conflict. I mean, it's a silly example, but that's conflict. But if we can't get to a place of resolution, then, I mean, talking about a miserable date night, right? But resolution can look in a million ways if we really slow down. I mean, it can be one of us does say, you know what? I had Mexican a couple nights ago. You're right. Let's go.
Right.
You know, we can give to each other. But the joke I always make is, or gosh, if we really are both there, what if we just accepted? Wow, I hear you really want Chinese. I really want Mexican. I know. let's go to the mall food court and we'll both get crappy Mexican and crappy Chinese. Or better yet.
And then we'll stop by CVS for some Pepto exactly, because who knows what's going to happen there. Yeah.
But, you know, or let's call two Uber Eat guys and, you know, I'll mind delivering. Yeah. You know, but like there's ways to resolve it.
Right.
We don't have to just keep fighting until one of us wins and one of us loses. Those are the dangerous conflicts in marriage. I think.
Yeah, I think so. I was just when you said that, I'm thinking about, man, there's so many factors that go into how what makes us double down.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, and your own, and I appreciate you saying that earlier, your need to acquiesce to her, and there's a nobility in that. Every personality has a way that I think that they handle conflict, and I think learning how to recognize, as you said earlier, patterns, hey, this is what I do in conflict. Mm-hmm. So let me understand that, and let me try to do something different.
Right.
And mine was kind of walk away.
Yeah.
You know, not in a good way.
Yeah.
Because I saw, you know.
Yep.
Like every family, my parents had conflict, but my dad, you know, he eventually left.
Yeah.
And they, you know, that was the pattern subconsciously, I think, that I saw.
Right.
And so I'll walk out of the room, I'll get in the car, I'll leave, I'll just have the last word and, mm-hmm. you know, injure and leave. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so that, yeah. you know.
Yep.
That doesn't go well.
Well, you know, it's interesting you said that we talked about my contempt earlier. You're talking about stonewalling in Gottman's language. Those are two of the four horsemen.
Yeah.
You know, that we either stonewall, you can't reach me, I become contemptuous, I'm dismissive. And then the other two, just since we're here real quick, is defensiveness. Oh, my gosh, you know, the blame game. You know, I'm not going to accept responsibility, but I'll blame you. You confront me, and well, no, it's your fault, you know. And then the fourth one that he talks about is criticism. And, you know, criticism is different than offering a complaint. You know, I say all the time, offering a complaint is part of a healthy marriage. You know, if I tell Laura, hey, I'll be home for dinner at 6, and I come at 6:30, and she says to me, hey, I'm really angry, I'm frustrated. You said you'd be home at 6, and it's 6:30. That's not criticism. That's like, it's a complaint that's healthy. Right. It's just like, hey, I'm disappointed. I wanted us to be together earlier. I had dinner ready, whatever, you know. But criticism is, you know, that sarcastic thing. Criticism is when I'm attacking your character. And so, you know, you think about those four things, whether it's your stonewalling, which I appreciate you talking about, or criticism or contempt or defensiveness. I mean, those are just four ugly monsters. And when they're present, those are the barriers to conflict getting resolved. I think those are the big barriers to conflict getting resolved.
Yeah.
Well, I know that you have a tradition on Valentine's Day. How you always write a song for Jen. Would you want to share the one that you've written for this year?
No, I don't.
I don't know where that came from.
Yeah, I know. I did sing a song one time, though.
Did you really?
I think I did. I think it was Valentine's Day. I had our kids. Will played the guitar. Caroline played the piano.
And you sang?
I did. And man, when I tell you I can't sing, I can't sing.
But please tell me there's a video somewhere of that.
There's a still picture of it, and that's really all I'm going to say because it kind of sounds like I'm patting myself on the back and, you know, the guys out there listening going, oh, great. Yeah, now I got to do something.
No, I think it's awesome.
I'm not the best gift giver or spontaneous romanticists, but a few that I've done okay over the years.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, it was fun. It was pretty good.
Do you remember the song?
I do. But I don't know. I don't have permission to share this, so I don't know that I'm going to share any more than that.
Just tell me it wasn't Barry Manilow.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. It was funny the other night, though. This is great. And Jen's going to be like, oh, God, edit this out. We were watching a show, and we were laughing. It was a comedy, and it was actually really funny. And but they sang a song and just butchered the song. And... you know, we were laughing at that. There were so many things about it that were funny, but, and she said, oh, babe, they're butchering that's our song. And I looked at her and I go, that's not our song. It's just, oh, that's right. It's not. I'm like, oh my gosh, man.
I love that.
She never forgets things like that.
I love that.
It was funny, but.
Last thoughts on love and marriage. Fun this conversation went this way, but anything else on your mind as you're thinking about, you know, this gift of marriage and this challenge of marriage, because they're both, and just kind of, as we always talk about, they're looking back, you know, any other thoughts?
Here's what comes to mind, man. And, you know, our marriage, if it, I try to say this, if our both our wives are sitting here, our marriage is not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
I love that.
When I think when the Bible says it's not good for man to be alone,
yeah,
it's really not.
Yep.
For yeah. a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful. Mm-hmm. I am grateful mm-hmm. for my wife, and I love mm-hmm. her, and she's, you know,
mm-hmm.
she's. Mm-hmm. She's exactly what I want yeah. and need.
Yeah.
And so I would say, yeah. you know, if your marriage is not great, if you're divorced, mm-hmm. if mm-hmm. you're a widow, widower, or whatever, I mean, like everything, there's grace, there's redemption, there's all the things that,
yes.
that come with that and repair.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't say this to, you know, I don't say this lightly, but if you're I think the thing that comes to mind, long answer to your question.
That's all right.
If you're a young couple and you're pretty sure you're committed to staying married and you start having kids, man, just work it out and hang in.
Yeah. Yeah.
As best you can, yeah. because the things I remember, we don't do a lot of, you know, my family, as you can probably imagine, is a little bit lax. We don't do a lot of ceremonial type things, but we have a lot of good conversations.
Yep.
Organically.
Mm-hmm.
The things I remember that my kids have said to me later in life,
yeah,
most of the time have been a result of the fact that their mom and dad have stayed together.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, again, I'm not patting myself on the back, and I'm certainly not trying to shame anyone that's listening that has not had that road. You know, why God's allowed me to do that, why God's given my wife patience to stay with me
right.
for this long, man, I don't know.
Yeah.
But
you're grateful.
I am. It's not everybody's story.
Mm-hmm.
But as much as you can, the stability that provides kids is
mm-hmm.
it's priceless.
Mm-hmm. When you were saying that, I remember being asked a question a number of years ago by a counselor. Laura and I were in the office together trying to, you know, battle through some negative patterns we had in our marriage. And the guy was a person of faith as well. And he asked me this question. He goes, Jeff, do you think Laura is God's good provision for you?
Mm.
And Steve, I mean, to my shame, here's what came out of my mouth. I said, well, I think she can be.
Oh, man. But that's honest.
It was very honest, but you know, the minute it came out of my mouth, I just felt naked standing on the freaking North Pole. I was like, oh my gosh, what did I just say? And not even because Laura was there, I certainly felt profound shame about what I just said, but realizing, my gosh, that's exactly how I live my life. Because in effect, my answer was, well, if she gets her crap together and she starts acting the way I think she should act, then yeah. Then she's what God wants for me.
Right.
I mean, the arrogance in that was unbelievable.
And don't we all feel that way a lot?
Yeah. Yeah.
If my spouse would only, then our marriage would be okay.
Right. Right. But I remember that was a defining moment for me, because I remember leaving there that day going, wait a minute, God, you didn't accidentally let us come together and get married. It wasn't a mistake. You knew that what I needed was Laura. And I think that was one of those, you know, you have a few moments along life's way that really shift kind of your DNA, I think.
Right.
That was one of those moments for me of realizing, oh my gosh, I want to accept Laura in any moment, even our ugliest moments of conflict, that even that moment, this is God's good provision for me. And that's exactly who she is. I look at her now, and you know, we've been married 37 years, 38 years this summer. And, you know, I think she's as beautiful as she ever was. I think she's as kind as she ever was, but more than kind, she's stronger than she's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what I love about her is that, you know, she's found her voice in her marriage. And I remember early on when she started finding her voice, I didn't like that too much, because
yeah.
I was able to get away with a whole lot of crap for a long time in our marriage. And when she started finding her voice, I was like, well, where'd the quiet woman go?
Yeah.
But man, I love that she has a voice and that she's not afraid to use it, and she's not afraid to love me with it. And I adore her. I'm just so grateful for what we've built together. But boy, we built it through hellfire and brimstone. We built it through the hard days and the good days.
Well, and you know, thinking back on, you know, when we were talking about a young family is a little bit like a business. As you go through 20, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 years of marriage.
Yeah.
there are six or seven times where you're a profoundly different person, you know? And one guy used to say, you know, every time he had a birthday, he said, you know, you've never been married to a 35-year-old guy before, yeah. This is, you know, and there's truth in that, you know, like I'm a different guy in my 30s than I was in my 20s, 40s, 50s. I'm different. Yes. My wife is different. Yeah. And understanding that people are going to change a ton over time, good and bad, and just being, you know, willing to go, all right, let's pay attention to the changes and
and
understand that. Yeah. I think a lot of navigating life is just, again, we're probably going to come back to the same theme because it's what we've talked about for years. Understanding that it's just not. The Life is Good t-shirt drives me crazy.
And of course it does.
I'll give a little context to that. There are great moments in life.
Right.
Beautiful moments in life. But the expectation that it's always good, it is good at a base level because I believe God created it, and I believe there's value in
therefore
it.
Therefore it's
but
good.
But to our point that we talk about all the time, there's value in the ugly. And sometimes it's good. There should be another line of that song. Life is good, and sometimes it sucks.
Yeah.
But knowing that there are periods that's going to happen, I think relieves stress and pressure.
I agree.
And go, all right, hey, we're in conflict. We're in the counselor's office. Welcome to marriage.
Right.
You know,
right.
We'll get through it. But working under the assumption that never happens.
Yeah.
Is where I think the four horsemen ride in quickly.
Good words, man.
Thanks.
I think as we wrap up for today, I'm really glad we came to this topic. This is not what I walked in the door thinking we were going to talk about.
What
this
did
morning.
You think we were going to talk about this morning?
I thought we're going to talk about whatever Steve brings because I felt like a blank slate this morning.
Really?
And yeah,
I did
really,
too. This is the first time I'm like, I'm sitting there this morning drinking my coffee. I'm thinking, I got nothing.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Maybe people are listening now. Goes, well, you still had nothing. Still you didn't bring Jack squat to the table today. So
that's okay. It's always a possibility. That's okay. But no, I think part of when we talked about doing a podcast together, I think part of what I hoped that you and I could do together is look back on our, gosh, I've never thought about this before. Combined 65 plus years of marriage. Think about that between our two. I know. They just hit me then.
It's like saying Michael Jordan and I combined scored 37,000 points in the NBA.
Did you really?
Yeah, we did.
But you know, I think this was kind of one of my hopes was that as we talked about different topics, whatever topic that we talk about, that there would be something that we could kind of glance back and go, "Gosh, what did we do well back there?" Because there were moments. Yeah, and man, how can we kind of be the warning light for people based on the things we did poorly?
Yeah.
And this is a fun conversation to me because I do hope if there's some people listening in who are, like you said so beautifully, who are in a hard place in their marriage right now, I just hope this is a tiny word of hope today because I do believe marriages can be redeemed. I do believe that that hope can show up, but it requires work. And I think even in those marriages where the pattern has gotten so destructive that it can't be saved, it can't be redeemed, it has to end, that doesn't mean that joy or love or even another relationship never can happen again. And I think that's where I'm just so grateful that there's always a better future ahead as we learn from those things in the rear view. Good stuff. All right, man. We'll talk again soon. All right. All right.